This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode, Living Greener, One Decision at a Time. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Recycling makes us feel better, right? Especially when it comes to plastic. Keeping all of those milk jugs, containers, and packaging materials out of landfills and sending them off to be made into something new. In some communities, recycling is the law. You can get fined for not doing it. But Pulse reporter Grant Hill has recently considered giving up on recycling. That's right, not recycling. Why? Because ever since learning about the troubled state and history of plastic recycling, the process has felt like a bit of a charade to him. So he went on a mission to find out if he should continue sorting his trash.
When I called Wayne DeFeo and told him I was considering giving up recycling plastic, I expected pushback. After all, Wayne is a recycling consultant who drives up and down New Jersey to help optimize waste management processes across the state. But Wayne seemed empathetic to my crisis of confidence.
It's frustrating to watch where there are litter baskets on the street, and then you have recycling bins next to that litter basket, and they're both full of the same thing. Okay, that's a failure of recycling, and then residents...
But after that nod, he had no problem telling me, in so many words, that my idea was idiotic.
Well, I would tell you, it's just wrong.
So here is the backstory. Like most people my age, I'm in my 20s, I learned about recycling as a kid.
Recycle, to take something used and make it into something new. Not overkeeping. That's it.
It was just part of being a good citizen.
So you gotta find a way to turn the old into new, then you won't waste anything.
From the toys in my bedroom to my backpack for school to beloved fast food drive-thrus, our entire way of life depended on colorful, lightweight, and nearly eternal plastic materials. That meant we all had to contribute to keeping these materials in circulation and out of landfills and waterways. Together, we could make plastic clean and sustainable. It made sense to me. I quickly absorbed that old mantra.
Reduce, reuse, recycle. It's very easy to do.
I remained a committed recycler until more recently, when I found out that the dream of plastic recycling was more of a pipe dream. Or, as Davis Allen, an investigative researcher with the Center for Climate Integrity, would put it, a lie.
This broader campaign to make us believe that plastic recycling was more viable than it actually was. And it's been very effective in that people have really taken it to heart, that that was a way that they could make a difference.
Davis recently co-authored a report that built on previous investigations to show how, since the 1980s, the plastics industry has spent millions of dollars promoting recycling as the answer to an explosion in plastic waste.
What's clear is that going back a long, long time, there was a pretty good sense among people who were aware of the situation that recycling just wasn't a viable solution for most plastic products.
The horizons of plastic are lengthening and strengthening too.
At first, plastic seemed like a miracle material, a shapeshifter that could morph into anything from clear bags to lampshades and storage boxes. Throughout the 1950s and 60s, little concern was paid to what happened when its miracles ran out.
The ingenious alchemy of coal and oil provides the material into a wide variety of products, articles for household use, as well as...
Until the late 60s, early 70s, there really wasn't much interest in or concern about plastics disposal, at least among people in the industry. The idea was, you know, our markets are growing dramatically, in large part based on single-use disposable plastic products, especially plastic packaging. And they just weren't very concerned about what happened to it afterwards.
Most plastic trash ended up in landfills or incinerators.
But 1970 was the first Earth Day, and people began to be concerned about environmental problems in a sort of different way than they had been before.
By the mid-80s, the waste problem was ballooning out of control. Some states, including my home state of New Jersey, proposed banning single-use plastic. In response, Davis says the plastics industry devised a multifaceted campaign via front groups and foundations centered around a new concept, recycling.
The effort really took a wide variety of forms, and they were targeted at different audiences. You know, they were targeting the public, they were targeting lawmakers, they were targeting the media. It was a widespread effort, but it was very effective.
Decades earlier, plastics insiders had already quietly identified the economics of recycling as, quote, virtually hopeless. Still, the campaign made people feel like they could keep consuming and be a part of the solution. Take those little numbers from 1 to 7 inside the triangle arrows used to label all the plastic stuff you buy. It was devised by the Society of the Plastics Industry in 1988.
They claimed that it was a way to improve recycling by making it more clear what kind of plastic resin was in a given product.
Recycling advocates warned that the system would only lead to confusion among consumers, that by labeling all plastic with this symbol, regardless of whether it could be recycled, consumers would think that most plastic was or could be recycled when that just wasn't true. But Davis says deception was the point.
Unfortunately, the industry was really successful in getting a large number of states to pass legislation requiring those symbols to be added. And then ultimately we get the system like we have today where, you know, virtually every plastic product you see has some kind of recyclable symbol on there.
In a statement, the American Chemistry Council, a plastics industry group, called Davis's report flawed. But Davis says the results of the campaign speak for themselves.
The recycling rate in the U.S. is unfortunately really low. Currently, I think it's 5 to 6% of plastics that are getting recycled.
5%. This sad statistic and this whole history rolls around my head every time I dutifully sort my trash into the recycling bin and carry it to the curb. Is this all for naught? Am I just doing this as a performance for my neighbors? When I told Wayne DeFeo, the recycling consultant, that I was thinking of giving this ritual up, that I felt like a dupe for sorting my trash, all for a measly 5%, he invited me to my local recycling processing plant in Burlington County, New Jersey. Wayne knows the statistics around recycling rates. He didn't ask for this system, but it's the one he inherited.
This is like a trash waterfall.
Well, not trash. Not trash.
These spinning wheels help to kick the cardboard up because it's flat and light. Everything else falls through.
This is one of the oldest recycling facilities in the state, first built in the 1960s to help employ adults with developmental disabilities. Today, it's a sprawling orchestra of refuse, a maze of whizzing, crisscrossing conveyor belts, wheels, sensors, and tiny compressed air cannons that spin, fling, and sort through metal, cardboard, paper, glass, and three kinds of plastic.
This is the first step in quality control. The people here pull off anything they see that doesn't belong here, like a toaster. Why there's a toaster in there, I couldn't tell you, but it shouldn't be there.
Alongside the humming machinery, dozens of workers sort through this steady stream, removing what the instruments missed. It's a dangerous job. Bins are often carelessly filled with materials that shouldn't be there. Thermal cameras weed out misplaced batteries inside piles of material, which, if punctured or compressed, could spark a fire that burns the whole place down in minutes. Used needles have sent workers to the hospital. Wayne shows me a sword once picked out of a daily collection.
I don't know if you can hear me, but this is the feed to the optical sorter. Since this is mechanical and run by the computer, look how much faster this line is running.
As we make our way through the facility that Wayne compares to the game Mousetrap, I feel my throat tighten and my eyes water. I blame it on the smell, sour milk on an industrial scale.
And to give you context, this facility can process, sort, clean up about 35 tons of material every hour.
After half an hour of climbing stairs and weaving through processors, we reach the end of the line, and there is a mountain of bales of compressed plastic ready to be loaded onto another truck and taken to be melted down and processed at another nearby plant, to be sold and eventually reused. All of it gathered in less than one day from the state's 11th most populated county. It is, simply put, an unthinkable amount of plastic.
Why are we here? Because it's a combination of two things. Consumers like convenience, and manufacturers make things to meet that consumer convenience, but also sell us and tell us what we want. And we buy into it.
Wayne knows our world is drowning in plastic, and that this orchestra, no matter how remarkable, won't save us. Last year, the United Nations began work on a global treaty to end plastic waste, but it's far from finished. Wayne reassures me that this is why regular people must continue to play their part, despite the system's faults. Rather than curse how little plastic gets recycled, Wayne tells me to treasure just how much really does.
That story was reported by Grant Hill.